Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa, I'm your host, and in today's episode, I'm speaking with fitness trainer Trey Bruffy. Trey and I speak about how to identify root causes of health issues without blood work or extensive testing, why reducing training intensity is sometimes required for better gut health, and so much more. I hope you enjoy the episode, and please, if you like the show, subscribe and give us a rating, or take a screenshot and share the episode on your social media. Thank you so much, and as always, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes for more details. Now on to my conversation with Trey. Trey Bruffy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you also. I'm super excited for our conversation, and I would love to hear what is the number one thing you are excited for our listeners to take away from our conversation today.
Keep it simple, stupid. When it comes to health, 100%.
I love it. Absolutely. People love to overcomplicate things or think it's the new sexy, shiny, fad, whatever. But super, super cool. And even just this answer gives me a bit of an insight into your coaching philosophy. But why don't you share with us how you got into fitness training or into creating your business, Be Opposite Training?
Yeah, so I actually started because I was a wrestler, and I got my first client when I was 17. So I was still in high school. Worked with a guy named Chris Edmonds. That's who runs Mountain Dog Training. He's my original mentor and training partner. Grew up in the same area, so it's kind of because of him. He was my first trainer, strength coach, nutritionist, and then I got into coaching some of my classmates, and then when I got in college, it continued to go from there. The B opposite thing. So it was kind of something when I was working with him, I would diet for my first show and it ended up being like a 38 week prep. We weren't really prepping. We were just doing it for the heck of it. Like the comment we always said was just suffering for the fun of it. But my theme was, we always said, just be opposite of everyone else. Everyone else wants to skip or complain or not push through things, be opposite of them. So that was kind of something I gravitated to. And then back in 2015 is when I named it my business. So it was Be Opposite Train Nutrition. And then back in August of 23, Austin Stout, he owns Integrated Muscle and Health. He brought me on to help him with his team. And so now Be Opposite is more of a local sector. So it's now more in-person training. My wife and I run that local to here to Ohio. And then all of the online is through Integrated Muscle and Health now.
Very cool. Thanks for sharing that story. And I love the name of the business because, yeah, I like to say if people want to live a normal life and do the normal things, then they're going to get the quote unquote normal results in the sense of being overweight, unhappy, divorce, you know, like all the things that nowadays, unfortunately, are sort of the norm. And if we want to live extraordinary lives, we need to do extraordinary actions in terms of our nutrition and training. So I love that. Absolutely. So yeah, tell us a little bit about your philosophy, or I mean, you mentioned keeping it simple, keeping it stupid. What does that mean if someone comes to you and they're like, right, with simplicity in terms of nutrition, let's start there perhaps.
Yeah. So like it's changed over the years. I mean, because it's over 13 years at this point doing this. So it's went from like more bodybuilding focus to functional and lifestyle. Now it's just a bit of everything, where if you look at like today's industry, if we look at nutrition and training, I would say functional is all the rave right now. Like everyone's getting into it. Everybody's talking about this protocol, this flush, this peptide, and XYZ. And I'm not going to say none of that doesn't work. But the problem is now everyone is relying on that. And now they're viewing any symptom as something's wrong. They're developing health anxiety to everything, that they came and passed gas without thinking they don't have SIBO or something like that. Or they're just obsessing about all this excessive testing and stuff. And all of that has its place and has its merit. But if you don't work on the root cause and you don't get the basics down, it doesn't matter what you do. Like, sure, that SIBO protocol might fix everything, but I can promise you in less than 6 months, it's going to come back. You're going to be literally what functional coaching has turned into has been exactly what Western medicine is here in the States. protocol, medicine, take this. Oh, you have that symptom. Here's something else. Take this. It's the exact same now. So we're literally just Eastern medicine coaches versus Western medicine. My goal with Austin and Jeffrey Sue and a few of our other colleagues was let's simplify it. Let's hammer the basics. Let's hammer the root cause. Let's work on getting people to understand you've got to be able to just be at times. And what that means is if a symptom comes up, you cannot let it ruin your day and just say, oh, today sucks. I'm not going to do anything. I'm miserable. Because all you're going to do is ruminate all the time. And that's where we get that stress, like sick or stress functional issue loop all the time. So keeping it simple, stupid is like, focus on your nutrition. And that might mean removing the excessive tracking. It might stop checking your blood glucose every 5 seconds. It might mean stop doing the 20,000K steps and the 10-minute walks. It's literally stripping it down to the bare minimum and then building up from there and getting you to learn. You've got to be able to just be. There's never going to be a great day of your life. It's built in our biology. Like, there's going to be some autoregulation. There's going to be some ebbs and flows. So that's kind of what myself and Austin and Jeff have kind of taken, I would say, over the last couple of years, is to really simplify things and then make room for when the more complicated stuff is needed, when that stuff isn't going to work anymore.
So great. Yeah, having that foundational understanding and those foundational habits as opposed to starting with your SIBO protocol, even though you're drinking a ton of alcohol, stressing yourself to whatever, and exercising 7 sessions a week or whatever. So yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really, really, really great approach. And I think I hear also it's very individualistic. So as you said, for some people, it might mean stopping the macro tracking. For someone else who has no idea of their protein intake or how many calories they're consuming, it might mean starting macro tracking. And so, yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I actually really like the approach of not having too many tests because, from a personal perspective, because as a digital nomad traveling a lot, I don't always or often have access to good blood work or whatever. So my question to you is, for someone who does not have blood work or tests available, how can we identify the root causes of various health issues, perhaps just by first glance or so?
Okay, so the way I do things personally is I always, let's say Bobby Joe signs up today, hey, I want to work with you. Before I even talk to them, they're filling out like a very in-depth symptom assessment. And it's looking at every part of the body. I'm going to go off of the symptoms and what I know they have done in the past first. And that first phase is, and I don't even like to say phase, but that first period of time is, let's nurture the body with as much food as possible in terms of quality nutrition, micronutrition. Let's use food to our advantage in terms of kind of food as medicine. There's certain things that we can implement within the diet that's going to be healing. And that's one of the issues with all health issues, in my opinion, they all start with the gut. That's just my personal opinion. And we have it so confused where we're thinking in order to fix everything, we need to kill everything. And that's where you have what's called germ theory. So if I eradicate everything, I will feel better. Then the other side of the fence is terrain theory, which means if I keep the gut lining intact, if I have the body's self-defense mechanisms intact, I'll be fine. It's actually in the middle. And so the phrase I always use is healing doesn't always mean killing. And that means digging into every side of things. So if we look at nutrition, you could put something there like grass-fed ghee or butter. That's going to provide help with butyrate. That's like gas for the gut lining. So that's going to help with short chain fatty acids. You could build in different diversity through fruits and veggies. Most people, if we're looking at like competitors or bodybuilders or whatever, they eat the same chicken, broccoli, and oatmeal, and that's it. And they wonder why they all have GI issues, or they're maybe having diversity, but they're hammering so much protein in the first place. And they're so stressed that they don't even have the ability to actually break that down. So the food's just going to sit there anyways. So by including things like ghee or bone broth, that's going to provide collagen. That's going to help with the gut lining as well. Slow cooking your meats, different diversity of fruits and veggies, dropping that protein down. Everyone remember, carbs is protein sparing. You don't need 2 grams of protein per pound. I understand the data and the evidence say more protein is better. But if you can't break it down, you can't digest it. It doesn't matter what data says. It just doesn't. So lowering the protein, that's where I would usually start first. And then we might look at some tier supplementation, make sure they're getting basic micronutrient taken care of. Maybe it's methylated B vitamins. Maybe it's using some like apple cider vinegar to help with stomach acid, could help with blood glucose. Maybe some lime juice that will help with bile. There's some anti-parasitic properties with that, could help with digestive enzymes. And then maybe we use something like a specific magnesium, like tailor that to them. So if someone's maybe had a virus vaccine type thing, maybe we go with like a magnesium taurate because that's going to help more with myelin sheath, which we know viruses and things like that does impact myelin sheath. So the magnesium taurate would associate with that. Or maybe if we just need something broad spectrum, maybe a magnesium glycinate, that would probably be the rate we go. And then maybe some light gut lining support with like a zinc carnosine. Notice I didn't say anything like allicin or berberine or betaine. HCL is like the most common thing everyone's using. Let's just throw betaine at everybody. But people don't realize not everyone responds well to that. If someone's got a stomach ulcer or gastritis, that's the absolute worst thing you could give to that person. So that's where I would start with them and then working on the habits. And that might mean taking time to chew your food, not hammering a bunch of fluid with your meal. You don't need to count your chews. I know everyone says, oh, 20 to 30 bites chews per bite. I can assure you, if you're counting every single bite, you are stressing yourself out and overthinking every single thing. It's really not that complicated. And then when you finish your meals, don't get up and go do that walk. I know you're doing it for your blood glucose and GFlux. And so you can eat more food and blah, blah, blah. Just chill out and let your body do its thing and digest. If you start there, start doing some self-care. Self-care for me, I'm very big with like initial starting people, if we're not going to do tests or anything, is building in some type of self-care. My one rule is it cannot count work and it cannot be fitness. Fitness is not self-care, neither is eating healthy. Those are needed for life, for your goals. Think back to when you were a kid. Like, was it Legos? Was it crocheting? Was it coloring? I do word finds. That's one of the things that I do to chill out. Or I watch TV with my wife or play with the cats. Like those are just things that I do as self-care. So I think incorporating that's where I would start with everyone. And if you go off of different symptoms, you can kind of get a roadmap of where to go. And then if you're needing to incorporate different foods or say supplementation, you can think more multifaceted. So a good example I have to give everyone is like, let's say like glutamine. That's a common one everyone uses for the gut. That only has one purpose, gut lining. That's the main thing everyone's using it for. The problem is not everyone can do well with that if they have an issue with like glutamine and glutamate conversion. But again, that's only one property. Well, why wouldn't we use something like a colostrum that's more multifaceted, meaning it has more than one property? It helps with the gut lining. It balances out the immune system. So if it's low, it'll bring it up. If it's high, it'll bring it down. It modulates the microbiome. It works on inflammation. It's going to have some lactoferrin in there, which is going to modulate iron. It's going to help with iron absorption. There's some antimicrobial benefits there. If it's bovine, there's some stuff that shows it can help with the IGF. So hypothetically, muscle building, that doesn't mean you're going to put on muscle with doing it, but I'm just counting out like how much more you're getting with something like a colostrum versus a glutamine. So when I'm looking at a symptom assessment, if I'm going to use any supplementation, I'm going to use what's going to give me the most bang for our buck, be as safeguard as possible and be as multifaceted as possible versus throwing in 20 different things that only have one property. And usually it's contradicting one another in the first place. And the client has a terrible experience, whether they're stressing financially or they're having a bad reaction. That's kind of where I'd start without the intensive testing. Then once they've been doing that for like 12 weeks, then maybe we look into things like blood work, get what we can through blood work, redo the symptom assessment. If things are still wonky, then maybe we either retest blood work or maybe we need to do more intensive testing like GI testing. That would be my next step. I don't really do the Dutch testing. I'm not a fan of it personally. So that's kind of like the tiers we would go. So symptoms, do that, nurture the body, some safeguard supplementation up from there, maybe some blood work. Doesn't have to be something crazy, depends on where you live. And then from there, if needed, maybe GI testing or something like that.
Absolutely love it. First of all, also that you're including the self-care in there and specifying that self-care is not your hot yoga class where you're, adding extra stress to the body in many cases, or your cold plunge, or a really, really hot sauna or whatever even. So no, super cool. Even just the notion and hint at, hey, what did you enjoy as a child? I think that's because many people, they have forgotten, like, what do I enjoy outside of work or outside of exercising? It's like that play. We have unlearned how to play. Or for many people, it just means like going out and getting drunk. And that's obviously not really the type of self-care we're talking about either. So I love that. I love how you've given us some examples of foods to perhaps incorporate in order to help with gut lining or gut health in general. But you also touched on some supplements. And I think, yeah, very, very helpful tips there. So thank you for that. I do want to ask you if you think that there is a place and time for certain, let's say, elimination diets or food exclusions, whether that be food groups or specific foods in certain scenarios.
So there are certain ones like I'm fine with it temporarily. So I might do like a low FODMAP. Like if I see someone, let's say for example, they're super inflamed, they're not digesting crap, they're constipated, they're just absolutely miserable. That's probably a case where I'm gonna be like, hey, let's remove all processed foods. Let's go as whole food as possible. Let's remove dairy besides sheet and goat yogurt. That's gonna be a little bit better for most people that have a dairy intolerance. It's usually going to be less inflammatory as well. Let's remove gluten, and maybe we go low FODMAP, run that for a week or two, see how they feel. If they feel good, then I might ride that out for a little bit. But what I'll try to do is sneak in some higher FODMAP foods just to promote microbial diversity. And it doesn't have to be something like I'm going to throw in a cup of broccoli or something like that. I'm usually going to throw in small amounts and see what they can withstand. So example would be like, let's go 2 to 4 weeks. That setup, removing some things that we know would probably cause issues. And then if they're doing fine and they're progressing fine and there's no issues and a lot of symptoms are better, okay, well, now let's start incorporating some of these things. So maybe it's like 25, let's say they're doing, I don't know, let's say 100 grams of blueberries in the meal. So maybe let's do 75 grams of blueberries and 25 grams of blackberries. Blackberries of FODMAP, that's going to help with microbial diversity. We're going to do a small amount and see if they can withstand it because at small amounts, it could work, but we're only going to do that for 1 or 2 days. Then another 1 or 2 days, let's say it is something like, let's say they're doing spinach in the morning with like eggs or something. Maybe we'll do a little bit of spinach and maybe like 1 or 2 shiitake mushrooms in there. That would be how we'd start. And then we'd slowly build up from there and then incorporate things like apple and slowly build up and see if we can create some microbial diversity. And a lot of times that does fix a lot of people's things. It's because it's not always like a bacterial overgrowth. It can be an undergrowth or just dysbiosis in general. That's where I typically start and slowly incorporating things. But I do see some merit initially pulling some of those things out. Get people feeling good because you'll get a little bit of buy-in. Because if someone does feel good and if they felt bad for 5 years straight, but they get a week of feeling good, they're going to think you're the smartest person of all time. So they're usually going to trust the process. You've bought their trust, so they're going to be able to follow it. Now we just kind of expand from there. So that's kind of how I would typically approach it. I don't think you need to stay on that long term. I would say most of the people I work with, I think it's usually only the first or second week total that they do like bypass untracked meals or off-plan meals. After that, I put them in, and I'm not really going to be worrying about it. Could it be taking longer for them to get better? Yes, but like let's say you have person A, they're going to do everything 100%, and 6 months they get better. In those 6 months, they're burnt out and they're not going to do it anymore, which means at the end of the year of 12 months, they're only 50% on point. But if I can incorporate an untracked meal every week, tell them to be responsible, focus on the point of what the untracked meal is for. It's to enjoy time with people you love and care about and not to obsess and track things. Well, if you're doing that all year and you're maybe taking a little bit longer to get better, I would be willing to bet you're going to sustain those habits you're trying to do and repeat. You're less likely to get burnt out. So then we look at the end of 12 months, you ended up at the same place a 6 month person did as person A, but you're able to keep rinsing and repeating for years to come. That's kind of how I would approach it there. Or I will sometimes build in rigidity breaks, and that might mean Monday through Friday, they might track XYZ, or we'll make it specific to them. And on the weekend, it's like, okay, there's no scale, there's no macros. These are your food choices. I want at least one or two of these meals, maybe one Saturday, one Sunday. Enjoy a meal with your family. Focus on whole foods. Don't be ridiculous and abuse things. The rest of the day, I just want you to pick from these food groups and eyeball and build it. Because there's going to come a day and time where you don't have Fitness Pal or chronometer or a scale to weigh things. This is a good way that they can practice these habits that we're trying to build and replicate it without the scale or macros or anything like that. But also kind of, they can take a breath and not worry about being perfect. Because there's no humanly, there's it's humanly impossible to be perfect no matter how hard you try. So those are a few different tactics I'll incorporate it versus what you kind of see talked about now is no untracked food. You can never do this. You need to do XYZ. And I'd be willing to bet most of these people either A, never get better, B, do get better, but it comes back, C, probably live very miserable lives and their families are miserable and it's just going to pass down to generations. They probably are not that successful. And again, they're probably overcomplicating the process in the first place. So it kind of defeats the purpose of like getting better, building sustainable habits. Like if you think the 1500s, not everybody was doing all this stuff, yet they were way healthier than we were now. If that makes sense.
Yeah, Trey, honestly, there's so much good stuff in there that I want to t touch more on. So, for example, some of our clients come to us initially and they're like o eating overly clean. So, to your point of the broccoli or the quantity, I wanted to say, like, some people, especially if they're in that dieting mindset where they're eating like bowls of iceberg lettuce or tons of raw broccoli, and then they're wondering why they're bloated. And I'm saying this lovingly because I've been there too. You know, if you're dieting and you're hungry, you just want to feel full. But no wonder that it's not necessarily something your gut loves. And so learning that, okay, it's not that specific food because they're starting to attribute like, hey, I don't tolerate broccoli. Like, no, maybe it's just the way that you're preparing it. Maybe not raw, and maybe it is the quantity. Maybe you need to stop at 75 or 100 grams or whatever. So that was a point number one. Or then the other point that you made in terms of sustainability and mindset, I absolutely love that attitude because, as you mentioned, like with that person that's going super strict for 6 months and then falling off or hating the process in the last 6 months, not only don't they get to where they want to go to, but also it's going to build that, hey, dieting, this doesn't work for me, believe. And then we're getting into the more limiting beliefs and the more I'm broken, something within me is broken, this is not for me, as opposed to learning like, no, okay, there is a more moderate way. Maybe it's taking longer, but at least it's something I can build on and I can kind of enjoy along the process as well. So really so many great tips. I did want to ask you about more specifically like keto or carnivore things, because some people now they think, okay, I've got gut health issues, I'm going to go keto or carnivore for a while. Do you see any issue with that aside from adherence for people, or specifically for women, also exercising women, you know, people that are leading stressful lives?
I think if you temporarily do it, it's fine, but you've got to be able to, you got to be adjusting other parts. So like if you're going to do keto or carnivore, you can't do super high volume training. You've got to lower the rep range. You've got to lower the sets, probably adjust the intensity. Maybe instead of five extra or like eight exercises, you do more like three to four. That's going to be the only way you can do it. That's just my personal opinion. But it's not a long-term thing. Like, you totally can develop like insulin resistance from just being keto the rest of your life. I see clients that come to me all the time. They've been abusing keto and they're just getting fatter. And then they can't even respond to carbs or they can't respond to anything. And it takes time to build back up. So I think in the short term, it's fine. Especially initially, if it makes someone feel good and they can be consistent with it. But with those people, you've got to slowly adjust. You can't just say, here's Mary. I've been doing keto for 2 years. You can't be like, okay, cool. This works. It worked for you, but it's not working anymore. I need you to stop that because it's making things worse. We're going to just put all the carbs in and keep the calories in. You can't do that because they're going to panic. They're not going to be able to stick to it. They're going to ruminate on it. It's not going to go over well. Instead, you got to slowly adjust it. So, like if it's like a keto, I might be like, okay, let's keep your calories the same, but let's start by introducing a little bit of carbs, maybe pre or intra workout. And then let's start by incorporating some fruit maybe once or twice a day. And then we slowly build up, and we might keep their calories the same where mentally they feel, okay, I'm not going over on calories, that type of thing, but slowly change over the macros and the food sources to where we can hopefully get out of that keto like state or whatever they're following. That's going to be the only way you can get out of it. Because I can tell you 9 times out of 10, if someone's been carnivore their whole life or keto their whole life or however long, they're going to freak out when your first change is, okay, we're going to do 40 grams of fat now. You're going to do 200 grams of carbs versus 150 grams of fat and 10 grams of carbs. They're going to have a complete meltdown. You're going to make things worse. Their relationship with the client will not work. They will not trust you because, again, you're trying to get them to meet you where you're at and where you want them to be versus the other way around, where our job as coaches or practitioners is to meet them where they're at. We take their hand and we walk with them to where we actually want them to be, that type of thing.
Yeah, from personal experience, I can only agree with that because so I about 10 years ago, whatever, I was following a paleo diet and but very low carb paleo. So even at the time, I was actually even afraid of fruit. And it came to a point where I decided for myself, okay, I'm gonna start eating more carbs because I just kept reading and reading about the evidence, especially with CrossFit training, which was what I was doing at the time. And at some point, I was like, okay, I need to like actually move with the evidence here. But I was even terrified of eating half an apple. Like I'm not even, literally to this point. And so I completely agree with what you're saying. And then even later on, after years of learning, hey, carbs are not that bad, I started my first gaining phase or muscle gaining phase. And even there, I was afraid to increase my own carbs by like 10 grams, even though logically I had gone through it, but it was like these little things. So I think it's so wonderful how you're just really emphasizing meeting clients where they're at, working with them, still though keeping your target in the back of your mind and communicating with them openly to what
Because
is the essential goal.
the problem is everyone's thinking optimal, optimal, optimal. I get that. We got to be optimal. But if someone cannot do it and stick to it for the long term, it's no longer optimal. But then you have the other side of the fence where it's like, it's got to be so sustainable. But then they get nowhere and it's 10 years down the road. And you're like, yeah, I've been working with this coach or trainer. And it's like, it looked the exact same. Like, you're still 300 pounds. What do you mean? What has changed? He's like, oh, he has me drink a little bit of water. Well, that's okay, that's sustainable, but that you're not making no progress. So that's where we really got to meet them where they're at, where it's optimal but sustainable. And it can't be this whole pendulum that we're seeing nowadays, 1 foot in, 1 foot out. It's really got to be a balance. And that's something I really try to incorporate with everyone is thinking, yes, we want to optimal, at the same time, it's got to be sustainable, but not too sustainable that it's no longer optimal type of
Well, and
thing.
to your point, most people are going to lose motivation if they don't see the progress within, especially in the beginning, but also within a certain amount of time. So, yes, absolutely on board with that. And earlier you touched on the point of like, okay, keto carnivore, perhaps not ideal if we're training really hard, or maybe we need to reduce training intensity. And that's something I wanted to speak about in general. Like, why also for gut health is it often helpful or necessary to reduce training intensity? Maybe you can explain that for us.
Yeah, so I mean, if you look into people like Chris Beardsley or Jake Dollishall, they're kind of in the camp of you want to mitigate muscle damage, mitigate stress, those type of things. And I totally agree. I totally agree with that. And that's one of the reasons why we want to reduce training. And if you're not getting the carbs, you're not getting the fuel, well, I can assure you're just going to cause more muscle damage or cause more stress on the body, tax your adrenals. Mess with the gut lining, mess with the gut, mess with that thyroid, et cetera. That you've got to pull back somewhere. Like if you're going to eat low and eat no carbs, you've got to pull back somewhere. It can't be you're going to shove a circle peg through a triangle hole. It's not going to work. Everything will eventually break. So that's kind of the whole premise. You're not going to have the fuel in the first place. You might get progress initially. And that's why, like, it's okay in the short term. Like if you're in a contest prep, like, sure, there's lots of people I've put in, like, protein, veggie, multiple times per week because we're trying to get that last bit of fat. But they're not doing that for 12 weeks or 20 weeks. It's short period of time, but notice a lot of times we're feeding those people back up. It's not like a permanent thing. So it's one of those things like, sure, you could do it in the short term, but if you're like, hey, I'm gonna be keto all the time, well, you can't just do super high volume training. You're not gonna have the fuel in the first place, and you're just gonna stress out the body and impede any result in the long term. And a lot of times you'll see some people make progress, but then they eventually go backwards because their body's just so stressed out. And sure, like the fats are anti-inflammatory, but you need the fruits, you need the micronutrients. They run into nutrient deficiencies, which means other parts of the body are not going to work anymore, which means you're not going to make progress long term. And that's why you can't just be keto your entire life or carnivore the rest of your life.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And so, like, extracting that to the person that might not be necessarily keto or carnivore, but has gut issues and is eating low calories, etc. You mentioned earlier that with those, sometimes it does require also reducing exercise intensity or so. So, does that have to do with mTOR or in general, and that kind
It's
of
more just mitigating stress in general, mitigating damage. Like we know, like training is a stressor regardless. It's going to stress out the gut. It's going to stress out the body. So I go a few different ways. I've had some like, because I don't prep female competitors. I'll work with them to get them better, and then I send them off somewhere else. I got out of prepping females a long time ago. So I've had some female competitors where they've taken 6 months off of training altogether. And we just see who walks outside and they make progress. And because we got to think short term, let's get better now. Long term, you'll get where you want to be versus your next show. That's one method. Another method might be we just lower the frequency and maybe we do like a full body session or upper lower split, or maybe it's push pull legs for like a male. But also, the other thing I personally like to do is just leave some reps in reserve. 2 to 3, 3 to 4, kind of help with the stress, help with the adrenals. And then I really don't believe in doing super high reps during these phases or during that stuff. That's a stressor. You're going to get some issues. So I always like to lower the rep range. Maybe if it's like a compound movement or like chest or back or legs, maybe it's like 7 to 9 type of thing. Arms, I'd probably be okay. Arms and shoulders, probably like 8 to 12, 10 to 15, I'd be okay with that. I wouldn't expect someone doing dumbbell side laterals for 2 reps, for 2 rep max or something like that. Like, so like, even though the data shows we can still build muscle with low reps and we're gonna mitigate more damage and it's healthier, blah, 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 we're not taking account joint integrity either. So it's kind of a mix of the middle type of thing. And the other reason why I do that is because when we look at most of these individuals, they usually have an identity issue. They have became their health element. Like if you were to ask these people, can you describe yourself without talking about your family, talking about your friends, your job, your health? Most people cannot do it. They can't, because now they're SIBO Sally. Their health element is their identity. They can't just be, I'm Sally, I'm XYZ. Sometimes I struggle with GI issues. It's no, I have SIBO. Yes, my name is Sally. They have it reversed. So, with that in mind, they usually have an identity issue. They're usually super stressed all the time. And when I say stress, it's not like when I tell this to clients, they're like, oh, I'm not stressed. I'm like, well, what do you describe as stress? And they're like, oh, I lose my job, divorce, death. And it's like, well, that's not what I'm talking about. Because how often is that actually happening in your everyday life? If you think divorce, maybe once a lifetime, maybe 2 or 3 for some people in the States. Think about a death, like you're not getting a death every week or every day. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the chronic stuff. We're talking about the stuff that's always repeating you, getting pissed off at stoplights, getting mad at your boss, like worrying about stuff you don't have in your control. So usually they have a chronic stress issue where they have poor stress perception. So those are two things, like those are things like you really can't control always. So we realistically can only control A, what we put in our body, B, our habits, meaning our training, cardio, supplements, blah, blah, blah. And then 3, your response to the chaos, AKA everyday life. With that in mind, me as a coach or practitioner, I have to control what stressors I can control, which is only nutrition, training, cardio. With me, I always make everybody do walks outside. I don't really, especially if it's the health stuff, if it's like prep, maybe it's different, but cardio, supplementation, and that's it. I cannot control anything else. I can sure give you some advice or kind of help you on the mental side and help with habits, but I can't do it for you. I can't get in your head and tell you to stop sweating the small stuff or to chill out or go to bed earlier. So with that in mind, I've got to control what I control, which means training and cardio is a stressor. So I've got to pull that back because most of these people still stress about everything and we're not going to get better in the first place. So that's why we have to pull back what we as coaches have control of, because we know for a fact most people aren't going to do the heavy work of working on their past trauma or addressing things better. Or for some, it might mean leaving really bad relationships or leaving a job that's making you miserable or getting away from toxic individuals. Most people are not going to be willing to do that. It's going to take them time. So us as coaches or practitioners, we've got to lower that training, lower that cardio, adjust the nutrition, supplementation if needed. That way we can kind of get them in the right direction while they do the hard work on their end. Our work is easy. We just got to tell you what to do and hope you follow it and meet you where you're at and understand and talk with you and be empathetic and understanding. But the main work where they're going to see progress is the hard stuff that you and I or no one can really control. Not even a therapist can control it for them. They've got to do it. So that's kind of why we'd pull back everything is just focus on what we can control as coaches as well.
I wish people might go back and listen to the last 5 minutes, because literally there was so much in there. Starting from even just the fact that many people don't associate, okay, I have poor gut health, that's probably got to do with how I train. Point number one. Point number two, where you said that some of the people you've worked with, they literally just transition into walking for half a year. Like, please listen to this. Some people are stressed about, I'm missing two of my training sessions. Am I losing progress, or is this bad, or whatever? And sometimes it is mu much more needed to take longer periods of time off, not just 1 week, not just two. You can't expect to see f full changes after that as well. So really, very important point here. And then when it comes to the controllables, I think from both sides, that was really great. As you said, we as coaches can only control and do so much, quote unquote, for you or with you. But also the perception of stress. I mean, there is so much research also coming out, or more in the recent years, really showing that how we perceive certain things, it's not so much like what it is or how much we are doing, but how we perceive certain things makes such a big difference. So worrying about listening to the news, listening to, whatever thing in the background, always having this negativity, very much a stressor that people are probably not aware of. I'm a huge fan of stoicism, and stoicism, as you might know, one of the big things is control, or only worry about the things that you can control. And I think we as a whole society need to adapt more of that thinking and everything, and just letting go of the rest, and stressing about your child's school problems or so is probably not that conducive. They need to go through their own trouble at some point.
A couple of examples I'll give people is like, well, one thing is like, everybody's like, I have to do this. I gotta do this. This is inconvenience. I gotta do blah, blah, blah. You gotta train. I gotta eat. I promise if you reframe your thoughts to, I get the opportunity to do this. So if you're struggling with the issue and you're upset with your coach or practitioner because they've written you something that you came to them for in the first place, none of us are putting a gun to your head. You don't have to do it. But no, there's tons of people, at least in the States, and some of the international clients, same way, where finances isn't the best right now, that they may not have the opportunity to work with one of us. You are blessed with that opportunity to work with someone that loves and cares and wants to help you. So remember that you get the opportunity to work on this stuff. You don't have to, but you do, or you are blessed where a lot of people aren't blessed. You get the opportunity to do that. The other thing I like to remind people, like when we think chronic stress, the really common example I give everyone is like, if someone told you they're going to put a needle in your back every hour on the hour, at first it's going to hurt. You're going to bleed. It's going to put a hole in your back. Over time, you're going to get used to it. It's not going to hurt anymore. Doesn't mean that, I don't know, 20 hours or 20 days down the road where they're still doing the needle, doesn't mean it's not still digging a hole in your back. You're used to it. It's the same thing with this chronic stress. you're desensitized. It doesn't bother you anymore. You're not even realizing it. So I find if people consider those things, that works. Or I'll have some people, every time something stressful happens, I'll have them put a check mark on a piece of paper if they're not going to hyper obsess about it. And they'll say, send me how many check marks it was in this day or throughout the week. And then you'll see it's like 200 times. You're like, see, that's what I mean. You are stressed. You're just not actually realizing it. Like it's just not a thing because you became used to it, where your stress of a two might be a 20 out of 10 for someone down the street. That's kind of like a few different things that I find works well when explaining with some people when you're thinking about that chronic stress or reframing your thought process when it comes to working through some of these things. Bodybuilding and fitness will always be there. But you got to get the health stuff fixed first to be able to bodybuild or compete or whatever down the road for years to come first. You've got to do one before you get to the other. So it's just changing their trajectory, and getting them to understand why we're doing it in the first place.
I think the desensitization is such a good point because quite often we don't realize that something could be better or should be better because we're so used to it. Even going back to the point of gut health and digestion, it might be like, okay, I've gone to the bathroom only every third day for the entirety of my life, so that's my normal. Well, it's still not optimal, or I'm always just sleeping 6 or 5 hours. I'm getting by just fine. I don't feel that tired, or this is the normal kind of tired. And like, well, you could be a lot better. So I really like that point of like, don't settle for just whatever has been normal for you, because you could be so much better. You could be doing so much better. You could be feeling so much better. But yeah, Trey, I want to respect your time. I can tell you are a wealth of knowledge. So thank you so much for sharing some insights with us. And I'm going to link all your notes, your social handles, et cetera, in the show notes. And of course, if anyone is in Ohio, hopefully they will go and check out the Opposite Training as well. And maybe even come and train with you. But I just want to say thank you so much for your time today.
Cool. Perfect. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Trey. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow on Instagram or YouTube. And remember, if you want personalized help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you are looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL at the checkout. Thank you for listening.